At Delta, we know Mike in 8C prefers reality TV to reality. So we provide more than 1,000 hours of in-flight entertainment. On the next flight, 8C is Mandy, a foodie. So we offer all types of food options. Because at Delta, everyone flies their own way. Delta, keep climbing.
Welcome back, everybody, to another edition of Irish Illustrated Insider. It's June 6th, Tuesday. Tim Priest with Tim O'Malley. Two-man booth here today. Notre Dame just completed Irish invasion this past weekend. We'll get heavily into that. Props once again to Tom Loy from 24/7 Sports for his incredible work at Notre Dame and providing that information for our Irish Illustrated subscribers. But coming out of that, and there will be more, we're certain, but we shall see. But coming out of the weekend, Notre Dame has a commitment from running back Kedren Young. Really like this running back. Frankly, you know, there was talk about him and some other backs. This was the guy I thought that was best suited for Notre Dame's needs. We'll get into some other guys, obviously, from this weekend. But let's start with Kedren Young, who kind of surprised us all last night by saying, hey, I'm committed to Notre Dame. We weren't expecting that. Normally, we have a pretty good clue as to when it's going to happen. But Kedren Young will be a running back at Notre Dame, Tim O'Malley.
Yeah, and it's well timed too, because we've talked about running back depth charts and how fluid they are. Obviously, people have listened to this, know how much I like the other running back coming in as well. Heinous Williams is a fantastic prospect in my eyes. With Diggs leaving and Estime should be leaving, we have to say those things because Audric Estime should have a very good year. He's a junior and he should go pro when it's over. And the coaching staff, it's the only position I think that exists where they should say, you should go pro to care for the young man's future. So you could have a total reboot coming up in Notre Dame's offensive backfield. And this is a great start. I think they complement each other well, the two freshmen coming in. And I like the other pieces in Ford and Payne, but not as much as those two. And then, of course, the X factor is Jadarian Price. If Jadarian Price in 1 year from today is as good as he could have been, they have a nice trio of running backs plus some complementary pieces.
Yeah, I would put Devin Ford in the same group as Kedren Young and Aeneas Williams. I don't think I'd put Jabron Payne there at this point of his career. But, you know, Notre Dame now has – Kedren Young is now Notre Dame's 18th verbal commitment in class of 2024. He is the fifth highest rated player among those 18. Notre Dame recently received a verbal commitment from Logan Thomas. He is the fourth highest rated player in the class, and Aeneas Williams is sixth. So, you know, I know when three stars commit to Notre Dame, it becomes a big deal. When four stars commit, it's just kind of brushed under the carpet, and you know, it's like little kids opening presents at Christmas. They just want to get to the next one when it's a good one. And Kedren Young is a good running back. Love his physicality.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I just think that he's got a lot of bounce. He you know, they list him at 220. He's not 220 yet.
I don't think so either.
He's not, but he plays like a 220 pounder, but I he's probably more in the 210 range. But whatever, I think he's the kind of back that Notre Dame, you like to have that power back. We know how great it is to have Audric Estime going into the 2023 season, because he is that guy with burst, probably even more burst now that he's gotten rid of a little bit of body fat that he carried last year. But so that's a great catch for Notre Dame, as was Logan Thomas. There are some crystal balls out there. When Tom Loy mentioned Bronte Johnson,
I was pretty excited.
Yeah, that really came out of nowhere. And so that sounds very promising. Notre Dame had, there were two outstanding offensive tackles here this weekend. Not only Styles Prescott, who I wrote a film review on months and months ago, who I love, but Gerby Lambert was here in town as well. Sounds like things went well with him. Cam Williams, the wide receiver, the five-star wide receiver, didn't work out on Sunday, which was disappointing, I know, for Tom and some of the people that were in attendance. But what we saw of him a little bit earlier in the weekend, Cam Williams is a smooth operator, man.
He is. I saw him last year at Irish Invasion, and that was the immediate, whoa, who is that? When you see that guy from 30 yards away, get a little closer and realize, oh, it had to be Cam Williams. And Johnson was... he was just a heck of a raw athlete last year at Irish Invasion. He's one of those guys that stood out. You didn't know it was, I think I saw him working a little bit of wide receiver, not only wide receiver and corner, but he was in the final 40 yard sprints too, like in the top three of the 40 yard sprints. You're just like, yeah, that guy just stuck out or showed up every time you looked at him in that camp. And that's when Tom put that crystal ball out last week. I thought to myself, holy cow, I never thought I'd hear that name again. So that's some good work by the staff if they can pull it off.
Yeah, we haven't seen him at safety. You know, said the video we saw of him was at corner, and just the one caution I would throw out there, and it's the same with Antonio Carter II, in that great athlete, great player. And as you've noted, Tim, before, in talking to players that have transitioned from corner safety, it's a completely different animal. So there's an adjustment there. But if Notre Dame is fortunate enough to land Bronte Johnson, we know he's a hell of an athlete with length, could play receiver. I think some other schools are recruiting him as a receiver. But as we know, Notre Dame has had to focus strongly on the safety position, and they like him there, and we'll see what happens.
And their success at receiver of late means he should start in the defensive backfield. I mean, I know that not every guy is going to hit out of the 23 and 24 class. Like Chauncey Stuckey said, we have three hits. He's going to think he has three hits again. He probably does, but yeah, I mean, are all six guys going to hit? Probably not, but boy, five of the six should. Have you liked trio receiver classes back-to-back as much as 23 and 24 in a long time at Notre Dame?
I would agree with you, Tim. And in talking about receivers, I mentioned Cam Williams, but Micah Gilbert was also in town this weekend, as was, I'm going to shift my attention here to some of the 2025 guys that were offered scholarships. I know people were raving. Tom Loy was raving about Derek Meadows, 6'5", 6'6", ran a 4.5 from Bishop Gorman. You know, that's an exciting prospect. I'd like to see him in person. You know, some of the other 2025 guys that were offered scholarships, Maddie Augustin, an offensive lineman. Gus Ritchie is a defensive end. Well, he was listed as one of the top performers with Derek Meadows, and also offensive tackle Will Black was offered 2025 guy again. So for all of this stuff, and again, Tom Loy's work this weekend, and then of course Kevin Sinclair following up from his station as well. I think our coverage of Irish Invasion was about as good as it gets this past weekend. So you can read all about that on IrishIllustrated.com. When we had our podcast last week, Sean Sevillano, I've been saying Sevillano,
right?
But apparently it's Sevillano, Sean Sevillano Jr.
Per him too. So we have to believe him, I would say.
Yes. Right? Yes. 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 Since our last podcast, he actually follows, or we expected him to commit to Notre Dame. But since our last podcast, he actually did commit to Notre Dame. I love the way he's trending. You know, again, I think that this is a kid that I hated his early film that I saw, but I think it's a kid. You know, he's a lot to, I mean, I'm being honest, right?
No. Yeah. But you've gone back since and liked newer film.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And I think, I'll say it. I think I said it last week. I think, you know, this is the proverbial, the lights turned on for him. And I think that he realizes what his potential is, how good he can be. Mm-hmm. He's got to keep his weight in check, but it looks like he's definitely trending in that direction. And with or without the weight, his good film shows exceptional quickness off the snap of the football. I think his ceiling, this is one of those guys whose ceiling is way, way higher than the original film that I saw.
And I think you make a good point about keeping his weight in check, because he also has a full year to learn how to do that. It is so interesting when we talk to athletes, they just don't know how to eat because they don't have to. They're 17 years old. And
yeah,
I mean, Christian Gray looks like a pro corner when he walks into a room and he talks about all he used to eat is Airheads all the time. So these guys get stronger or they get leaner. And Sevillano, I'm going to keep saying Sevillano too accidentally. Yeah. Here. Yeah. He does not, he's not coming in immediately and hitting the ground running and starting for Notre Dame. That's the good thing. So he will have a full year to exactly shape his body, and then I think when you're in that college program, I mean, then it's up to him, but then you're figuring about 75% of the time they learned it, and that's when all of a sudden they realize, you said he now sees how good he can be. Wait till he sees how good he can be with college strength training.
Yeah, no, there's, yeah, I don't think there's any doubt that he's trending in the right direction.
Yeah.
And so that's positive. So there's been some good news on the really good news on recruiting front, as there usually is coming out of Irish invasion. Yeah. But shifting gears a little bit before we go on to segment two, I had reason to contact former Notre Dame, two-time Notre Dame assistant, 5 years under Charlie Weiss and 5 years under Brian Kelly, and that's Brian Polian, who was at LSU last year. He transitioned into a general manager's role at LSU, and then unbeknownst, actually, when I contacted him, I don't know if you...
Oh, yeah, John Carroll?
Yeah, I did. Here, I'm talking to Brian Polian. I don't even know that he's now the AD at his alma mater in Cleveland or the Cleveland area, John Carroll University. But, you know, we were talking, and I don't know that we necessarily knew what direction the conversation was going to go, but we started talking about facilities. Mm-hmm. And here's his quote, Tim. I knew we were outgrowing the Goog, but I didn't necessarily know what the competition was. Then I went down to LSU and I was like, okay, this is what it's supposed to be like. He went on to say the facility stuff is real. The football staff has outgrown the Goog. We outgrew the Goog. We didn't have enough meeting space for the players. We didn't have enough office space for the staff. We didn't have training table when I was there with Charlie. These poor guys were running off the field trying to make it to South Dining Hall before they close it on them. Now, Tim, there's still this perception out there, and I had to clarify on Twitter some of the ridiculous comments that were being made about Notre Dame not having a training table. That's incorrect. The Notre Dame football players, and again, I can speak from knowledge of the process, they're not lacking nutrition. That is, they are not lacking access to nutrition. What Polian is talking about is the clunky way that they have to conduct business.
Yeah.
When recruits, when not just recruits, when players convene to eat in the Goog, it's outdated. It needs to be changed. It needs to be updated. Another, contrary to popular belief, Jack Swarbrick doesn't just snap his fingers and that's taken care of. There are other people making decisions as to when those things begin. So I'm not somebody put a cartoon out there. I think it was from The Simpsons of me jumping in front of a bullet intended for Jack Swarbrick. Look, when they put out the letter following the loss of the offensive coordinator from Utah, we were extremely critical of the way that was happened. But I
pulled over in my car. I wonder if I had my laptop because I was.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to deal in the. I'm not going to work from the emotion of fans who love to blame and accuse. And when I think Jack Swarbrick in Notre Dame does wrong, we say it. When I think that he's wrongly accused, I'm going to say that as well. If you choose to say Priester doesn't know what the hell he's talking about, then that's fine. But I'm not just going to allow shots to be taken at Swarbrick or anybody else at Notre Dame if I feel that it's misguided or unfair.
I do think, circling back, it's important to note when Polian said we didn't have a training table under Weiss, that was a big deal. That was a huge deal. That, I don't think that was an exaggeration, because I know I interviewed Jack Hinn, must have been Kelly's second year. I don't think he maybe would have gone there in his first year, talking about the 2009 team when they lost their final four games, and that was basically it for Charlie Weiss. He said that the average weight loss for the linemen, and I wish I had the quote in front of me, I'm just trying to remember, it was something like during the year in the 12 to 20 pound range, which is just insane if you think about it. And remember all the stories we used to write about November pain, how bad Notre Dame was in November, and it all changed under Brian Kelly. So, I mean, Weiss was kind of instrumental in making sure that they got that right. I'm not missing that. Yeah, Charlie Weiss, like, this has to happen.
Yeah, no doubt. I've had,
but it's been a decade. They've had it for more than 11 years. To your point,
that was a real problem. Access to nutrition is not that's not an issue at Notre Dame. How the operation functions is, and that's the next step. And they're behind, and it needs to be done. And you can blame a lot of people but it's not because Jack Swarbrick doesn't want it to happen. That's
right,
my own
right, point. Right. Yeah, and I thought Polian's point about Notre Dame kind of saying, I still feel like he was jumping back to a different era than Brian Kelly's when he was saying, if it's good enough for Lou, it's good enough for you guys. I felt like he was maybe bouncing between eras in that. I don't think that was a thing for Brian Kelly when Brian Polian came back. Do you?
I don't think he was saying that. He was making a demarcation between the two. I saw that they used Polian's quote about it may have been good enough for Lou, but it's not good enough, you know, for now. And then the Holtz Foundation, I'm not really sure who handles all that, used that quote and, you know, put out a tweet, which I thought was kind of a shot at Brian Polian. And there was no way that Polian was taking a shot
at Holtz. No. He's taking it. It wasn't a shot. Times change. Everyone can understand Lou Holtz would be Notre Dame's best coach at the last 50 or since Ara Parseghian in the last 50 years, but times change and you can't do everything the exact same. Right. That was Polian's point.
And then the Holtz Foundation Twitter account followed up, you know, by saying that there are other factors involved. And that's true. It's that the bigger factor is that teams in the SEC are spending hundreds of thousands of dollars in acquisition fees, talent acquisition, which, you know, I mean, Notre Dame's not going to keep up with that. I realize that a lot of people think that Notre Dame should match dollar for dollar with the SEC. If you're waiting for that to happen, I don't think that's ever going to happen. I mean,
this year they have a really good quarterback.
No, they do, but they're going to do it selectively, not across the board. Yes, exactly. And if that ultimately causes Notre Dame not to be a national power,
for instance, their backup running back, perhaps.
Yeah, they lost their backup running back to LSU, who I'm sure they paid.
And there are other, we've talked about all the other reasons there, but it's not like he decided to forfeit all of his NIL winnings at Notre Dame and decide to go to LSU for free just so he could be home.
There are limitations with Notre Dame. I realize that's frustrating for a lot of people, especially younger generation of Notre Dame fans that don't have the history to fall back on how Notre Dame used to play the game. But hey, I readily admit that's in the past too, and you have to adjust. I just don't think that Notre Dame's going to adjust to the extent that the SEC does. I'm not sure what conference will adjust to the financial degree that the SEC will. Or has.
Well, there won't be one because Texas and Oklahoma are joining it. So that would be the people.
Yeah.
That would be the people joining the fray as opposed to trying to fight against it.
Yeah. Hey, long first segment. I just want to throw this in here right now. And this should be journalism 101, and I violated it. But I knew people were excited about me having an interview with Jack Swarbrick on Friday. It has been postponed. It's been pushed back. We expect to get that interview next week, but I know people would be asking, hey, where's the interview? Friday isn't going to work. And so we're still in the process of of restructuring that and getting that taken care of early next week. But I don't want to promise that either because schedules are scheduled.
Getting it taken care of is just the way to say it. No timeline.
There's a lot of schedules conflicting with one another. And that's what happened this Friday. Sorry, we'll give it a shot next week. We'll give a shot to our readers in segment two coming up, Burning Up the Boards.
The last thing you want to hear when you need your auto insurance most is,
thank you for calling. Please listen to your list of 46 possible service options.
Which is why when you choose USAA auto insurance, you'll get great service that is easy and reliable. 24/7 online service for claims, access to roadside assistance, and more. All at the touch of a button. Start getting the service you deserve. Get a quote today. Ability to receive a quote depends on membership eligibility. Membership eligibility and product restrictions apply and are subject to change. USAA means United Services Automobile Association and its affiliates, San Antonio, Texas.
Segment two, Burning Up the Boards. Our first question and our second question has to do with the training table topic. This one from Surgeons Not. Never understood the training table point. As a student at Notre Dame from 14 to 18, I catered for football meals during the summer and the year in the Goog. They ate like kings with steak, fish, crab, etc. Maybe it doesn't compare with other programs, but it was definitely above what normal students got.
And then the second part of the question, or the second question from Murphy 324, I doubt players turn down Notre Dame because of the food. They pass on Notre Dame because One, they want to be closer to mom or girlfriend. Two, they believe they have a better path to the NFL elsewhere. Three, they aren't comfortable with Notre Dame's academic bent. Or four, SEC cash in McDonald's bag. It's all part. I bunched these together, and we kind of addressed it in the first segment, Tim. And I've said this before. Notre Dame football dictates what they eat.
Yeah, but I will push back on the first part of maybe it doesn't compare with other programs, but it was definitely above what normal students get. It has to be above what normal students get. Oh, that is not not an argument. That is the old Holtz argument.
Yeah, Scourge not understands that's the case, of course. But they're not walking away saying, "Man, I didn't have enough eat. I didn't have enough." First of all, this is another thing that, like, this perception that all football players are, you know, they're all about nutrition and all about eating the right things all the time. They're still young people. They're still
kids. Hopefully Irish Illustrated has an interview coming to that end in the very near future, where we're discussing that with the woman in charge of the nutrition at Notre Dame. And it is a relatively new position. So that could go back to, if people want to complain about this in 2019, and maybe it was more of a complaint, but yeah. There is a serious teaching the kids how to eat and how to fend for themselves, how to make the right choices. It's a major role right now at the football program. And I say that because the players keep offering it. They keep bringing it up. Notre Dame's players from freshman to senior keep bringing it up. And I think one of the first guys to talk about it was JD Bertrand, where we found out his, I know you want to talk about someone that only eats in terms of preparing himself for football. Everything he does, he's one of the guys where everything he puts into his body is specifically for his football job. But to your point, that was not been the case. Like, Tariq Bracey took years to learn how to eat, he said.
Yeah. So, access to that and these people that can instruct them it's how the food is served. And that has to be taken care of.
Yes.
I don't know. You know, we had a question about, well, when do you think they'll announce? I'm not going to speculate about that anymore because I don't know. And I don't know that Notre Dame knows on that, but that situation needs to be clarified. I said this to Pulley, and I mean, I don't, kids aren't coming in while they're being recruited and questioning how they're eating or what they're eating. They're 17 years old.
Weird to me when he mentioned it was part of it. I just thought that was, I think there can be aspects of Notre Dame's, the Goog and the Irish Athletics Complex, that we shouldn't include that because it's much different than the Goog, where if you have gone to LSU and Alabama and Ohio State, and then you walk into Notre Dame, you're like, huh, I expected more from this, but I don't think it has anything to do with the nutrition. I don't think they thought the food looked better somewhere else. I think it is on the list of reasons people might not choose Notre Dame. It's very low on the list. I think one is probably right now the combination of what Murphy 324 has in number 2 and 3. They believe they have a better path to the NFL elsewhere, and that they aren't comfortable with ND's academic bent. I think that's number one as a combined entity, because that makes sense. That's your future. And 89-90% of you are delusional because your NFL path is not going to exist very soon, but that's okay. No one knows that when they're 17. Closer to home, mom, girlfriend has always been part of it, and it always will be. You go back to the national championship team when Arnold Ali is moving back to UCLA after starting because he wanted to be home. It's as a freshman. That's just the way it works. Cash in the bag will always be part of it, especially in terms of the recruiting freshmen. And then I think looking at the facilities and perception of, as Brian Polian said, wow, this is what it's supposed to look like at LSU. I'm sure there's plenty of 17-year-olds that think that. Notre Dame has to eradicate that eventually. And I think that's why our subscribers are mad, because they think eventually should have been 3 years ago when the Irish Athletics Complex was being built. And I recall your conversation with Jack Swarbrick about how that kind of had to get up, had to be up. And then they could move on from there. I think to side with complaints, I would have thought they would have augmented the whole situation since then. And that'll be a great question for Swarbrick, is why it wasn't. Because that, remember he said it had to, this had to get up. This we had to have this thing built viable.
And the Irish Athletics Complex is a really, really nice facility. But again, it's like landing top recruits. What's the next thing? Okay, great. Thanks. What's the next thing? And I get that. And I don't disagree at all, Tim. They needed to make a move on the Goug well before now, and they haven't done it. Again, my only point is Jack Swarbrick can't snap his fingers and make that happen. He's just part of the process. He can push for it, or we'll hear, I don't understand why he doesn't push for it more. How in the world do you know how much? And then it was like, oh, well, then he should publicly call those people out. That's not the way teams function. You can't do that. You're going to embarrass the board. You're going to embarrass the administration to get what you want. Let's be real about this. That's not how you handle these things. It's a problem. It needs to be taken care of. I'd like to talk more about football than stuff like this, you know, but we end up spending more time talking about this. And I get it. Notre Dame needs to do it.
Well, Paul, having an ex-coach, you interviewed an ex-coach and he talked about it. So that right. it is a newly timely topic that wasn't timely. Right.
And I thought it was really important that I wrote that story then, because I've kind of downplayed that. And so, you know, I wasn't on the mark with that when a former coach brings it to light.
You know what I find interesting is everybody jumped on that story with you and Brian Polian regarding Notre Dame's training table and nutrition. But 14 years ago, when he said Stanford and Notre Dame don't even remotely compare in terms of how hard it is to get a football player, and everybody said Polian was crazy.
Yeah.
Was he lying once and totally honest the other time?
Yeah, no, exactly. All right, moving on to Go Irish 82. When does going to the transfer portal for a quarterback negatively impact recruiting? I think that's a good question,
Ken. I do too. It probably does at some point, and it doesn't matter because you have to get a better quarterback in all the time. You have to keep recruiting over your quarterbacks. The problem with placating a quarterback or coddling a quarterback in recruiting is they always, and I do not mean during the NIL era, they always leave. 50 yeah. years of quarterback competition, somebody leaves. So there should always be brutal competition where the guy that comes in behind CJ Carr is better than CJ Carr, or so we think. And CJ Carr has to prove that he's not. So you should always have a problem recruiting quarterbacks if they're worried about winning a job, because you have to over-recruit your quarterbacks. They always leave. They want to play. If the next Sam Hartman is available next year, you get that guy. And either Minchie or Steve Angeli transfers. That is exactly how you should run your Notre Dame football program right now in the NIL era. You have another choice. Now, do you worry 2 years later when CJ Carr is supposed to be your starter coming in? You better have a really good quarterback, right? You better have. But if you keep getting the next Sam Hartman, is that ever a bad thing? As long as he's a good fit in your locker room.
No, but I understand where Go Irish 82 is coming from. I think he's asking it in relation to the Minchie Carr combination. Like at what point do you hurt your opportunity for one of those guys to
develop
early? Well, and emerge early. You know, I can see them getting a portal quarterback next year.
Yeah. That's been part of
that. If Minchie and Carr are still here,
I agree with you.
At some point, you have to trust your quarterback recruiting.
I agree, but there's no reason to turn down a guy that can bring you from top 18 to top 5 either.
I would agree, but I'm not sure the Notre Dame is always going to pull in a quarterback of Sam Hartman's abilities and magnitude on a yearly basis.
No, it's difficult because there's that fine line of, here we go back to graduate transfer versus transfer. The quarterback that is a great college quarterback, say Russell Wilson back in the day, Sam Hartman, that cannot go pro right away. That is not a huge window of players that can start at Notre Dame over second year CJ Carr, second year Kenny Minchie, something along those lines.
Hey, did you see, I think Jack Cohn's getting an opportunity with the 49ers?
I saw that, yeah. He's going to be the slowest one of the four. That's for sure.
He will be, but he can throw it. I mean, he is a pro style quarterback, and I guess I'm kind of pulling for him to to land a spot and hang around the NFL a little bit.
Oh, he's impossible not to root for that guy.
The one season that we spent with him was, I mean,
a teammate, what a great teammate to come in and
great teammate that everybody respected. And I just saw that this morning. I wanted to throw that out since you have some 49.
He was benched multiple times in the first five games or made to sit for Tyler Buchner's unique abilities. And then he just kept coming back and winning games.
And to our knowledge, it never really impacted him. Yeah. That's competition. And that's the way you go about it. But interesting question from Go Irish 82. I understand your perspective, Tim. I know where the question's coming from, because when you do recruit highly rated quarterbacks, you'd like to see them develop and be a 3-year starter, or at least.
Yeah, I just think at some point nowadays, you just keep recruiting over them. So if recruiting over them means a 22-year-old that will help your team more, I get it. But yeah, my baseline is very high for bringing the quarterback over Kenny Minchie and CJ Carr. It has to be the Sam Hartman level quarterback.
What if you had another Jack Cohn?
Uh-huh. I don't think that would be high. It depends on what they think of Minchie. Jack Cohn, another Jack Cohn over redshirt freshman CJ Carr makes me want to go with redshirt freshman CJ Carr if he becomes what we think he will become.
Got it. Question from Kaiser Wilhelm. With NBC now involved in broadcasting college football more than just Notre Dame home games, are you concerned that NBC might try to compensate in the future by scheduling marginal Notre Dame November matchups at 7:30 p.m.?
I've never really thought about it in this way. That would be terrible. But Notre Dame doesn't want more than two night games on its six-game slate. I think Notre Dame would have a pushback against the Boston College senior day being at night. I mean, remember, Florida State was a bad team, but Notre Dame Florida State as scheduled at night was not supposed to be a letdown game. That's a marquee matchup in terms of programs. So I don't think they would do that. Clemson, Florida State.
Let me throw something in there. Notre Dame negotiates a contract with NBC to the level of payout that they're looking for. Does NBC then ask in return, hey, if we want to throw you in Boston College on November 10th at 7:30 at night, right?
Yeah, I mean, the money you make there is different than the money you don't make from ticket sales, so.
Yeah, true. But it's, again, I think it's a good question by Kaiser Wilhelm and I hadn't really thought about it either, but. Yeah. It's now on the list when we sit down with Jack Swarbrick, whenever that.
we should lead with that. Do you think the 2026 Boston College game is going to be played at night in November? Because we have some concerned parties here.
Yeah, I don't know. It is going to. I mean, we certainly know that there is some pushback from the Big Ten, especially Michigan, Ohio State, Penn State, I believe, as far as playing night games. I get it. I mean, especially when you're on the road. It's hard enough for the media, let alone the people that actually have to participate in the event that's happening on the field. So I get it. Good question. We will add that to the list of questions and see if we can get clarification.
Next from Jack Mac 99. Of Notre Dame's big three games this year, Ohio State, USC, Clemson, which do you think Notre Dame has the best chance of winning? Which game are they most likely to lose? Personally, I feel they have the best chance of beating Ohio State and losing to USC.
It's a legitimate question, as is the one after this, and we're going to address them both. My intention is for the 13th, I can't believe I've been doing this 13 years, 13th annual first rate series to begin this week, rating Notre Dame and its 12 opponents by position. And so my point being that I'll have a better idea of.
I know who's going to be number one, Tim. Games.
Yeah, I'm not really prepared to say that I know everything I need to know about Ohio State, USC, and Clemson. In terms of quarterback play, Ohio State is certainly way behind USC and Clemson to a large extent. The Clemson game's on the road. I do know that in taking a peek at Clemson, they've got most of their team back. So this expectation of Clemson losing three times a year, which we suddenly have now because of the last 2 years, I would caution people to not get used to that because they have most of their team back. I don't under man, Dabo Swinney is really not interested in the transfer portal. It's
yeah, and I they'll be coming up in our series I'm doing on the transfer portal, and it is going to be a, if you don't know about it already, it's a shock to your system. Anna Hickey just sent back her answers. It's quite a thing.
Can you imagine what Clemson fans are saying about his lack of use of
no? Oh my gosh!
When you imagine
the answers are. People are familiar with the series. These answers are shocking. They have nothing to do with the Ohio State, NC State, and Duke that just came in. You notice that Notre Dame is kind of commensurate with those guys in terms of bringing in. I don't know if anybody's read that or not, but Ohio State brought in seven or eight. Notre Dame's brought in seven or eight. It's Clemson's the outlier here, that's for sure. Well, and USC last year, obviously. I think if USC did what they did last year and it wasn't Caleb Williams, nobody would think it's a good idea to bring in 18 to 20 transfers. But when one of them is the Heisman Trophy winner that absolutely goes ballistic on everybody, it becomes
a first-round draft pick at wide receiver. Well, to answer the question from JackMac99, Tim, which of those three games do you think Notre Dame has the best chance of winning?
I think I have a feeling that they're going to beat Ohio State, but that's not what I'm basing this on. I think they're going to beat. I will believe USC is the one they have the best chance of winning because I don't think they're as complete of a team as Ohio State and Clemson. The thing about the Ohio State game for me is I'm glad it's in September with a new quarterback for Ohio State. I wouldn't feel this way if CJ Stroud came back. I had great respect for CJ Stroud, the player. I just think Ohio State's talent level is so much better than USC's other than a quarterback. Home game against USC at night, that crowd for Notre Dame. I think Notre Dame will beat USC. I know I've talked to some other analysts and they think that Clemson is the most ripe for the picking. I don't love the spot of that game for Notre Dame. I think the most likely loss is Clemson, and a big part of it's on the road. A big part of it is what happened last year. Dabo Swinney is a very good football coach, and he's going to have them ready after last year's loss. Ohio State's in the middle for me because they're so talented. I can't say that Notre Dame's got a good chance of beating them. It's just that, remember last year when I was like, Notre Dame is definitely going to beat Clemson. And Pete, yes. We were all kind of going back and forth and everything. It's like, they're going to beat Clemson. I don't feel that way about Ohio State because I just thought Notre Dame was going to be better than Clemson. But I feel like Notre Dame has Ohio State in a good spot. And Clemson has Notre Dame in a good spot. So most likely loss, Clemson. Most likely win for me is USC because you're basing too much of USC on that superhuman quarterback being superhuman.
Tim, I pretty much look at it the same way. I mean, I think Clemson on the road at that time of the year is really dangerous, especially knowing what they have coming back. But
Klubnik will be better at that point during the year.
Much better at that point. USC's defense still has to prove. I was maybe not shocked, but a bit surprised that Riley brought his defensive coordinator back. Now they've addressed defense certainly more in the portal. I don't know that it's to a level of difference making. We mentioned Ohio State with a new quarterback, but I pretty much look at it the same way you do. I think if I had to rate them as
Playing Notre Dame or playing Notre Dame?
No, playing Notre Dame.
Okay.
Playing Notre Dame. I would say Notre Dame is more likely to beat USC because of USC's overall personnel, especially defense. I would say Ohio State next, knowing full well that they are always loaded with talent, but they have a new quarterback. They have to reshape their offensive line. And yet, you know, Ohio State in terms of overall talent is probably greater than Clemson's. But again, Clemson, I'm copping out, but I'm just not, I haven't had a chance to study them. Yeah. That's what the summer is for me with the first rate series is getting a, you know, much closer look, looking at numbers, looking at film of these people. But I look at it the same way you do, Tim. I would rank them in that order, which leads us to the next question, which I think prompts a different response, which is from Onward to Victory 80. And that is 1.5 wins versus Ohio State, USC, and Clemson. Over or under, what side are you guys laying your money on?
I would lay a small amount of money either way, but I actually think I would go with over 1.5 wins. The issue is, when people all love that, is I would go with over 0.5 losses to Louisville, NC State, and Duke. And if you really want to throw in Pitt, I'll add that too, because everybody says, well, Pitt's at home. That doesn't matter at all. Notre Dame's fan base for the Pitt game versus the USC and the Ohio State game won't even resemble the same stadium, no matter what Notre Dame's record is. They could be undefeated going to the Pitt game, and it will still be sleepy as hell in there compared to the USC game.
Tim, I agree. And I know that everybody was down on Brennan Armstrong last year at Virginia, but I'm not sure how many people are aware that he has a new offensive coordinator at NC State. And do you know who it is?
Yeah, I always talk about this.
I know you do. It's Robert Unai, who worked his magic with Brennan Armstrong at Virginia, went to Syracuse for a year. Armstrong was in a horrible situation last year.
And he played terribly. He did. I mean, that's why people are down on him.
Yeah, I'm not taking the onus off of him completely, but he was with a first-time head coach. I've heard not great things about the way Virginia was run and organized. And so I think NC State week three, still kind of maybe the Ireland hangover after having played Tennessee State. Duke is probably of the group that you mentioned. And again, still looking at it here as June is starting, but I think Duke is probably the most complete team of those ones that you mentioned.
And I like the coach.
And Pittsburgh. Yes. And the coach came in and did a hell of a job the first time through, which I'm not sure that I knew that or expected that. I'm happy for him. Because I think he's just a ball coach, and who he is, you know, I just think that he's a pretty down to earth, grounded guy. Mike Elko, of course, is who we're talking about. But I agree. 0.5 on those other games. I would take the over on that. You would too, right?
Is that what you said? Yep.
As it relates to 1.5 on the big three, I wouldn't bet that. I don't think that's a smart bet to make. Mm. But if I had to make it,
I would definitely pass on the bet. That's for sure.
I would. Yeah. But if I had to make that bet, I think I would say over 1.5. But I'd put a nickel on it. How about that?
Yes, not the cool nickel either. You're an actual nickel. Yes.
Yeah.
From Insane ND Tucson, Sam Hartman ran the slow mesh at Wake Forest with a lot of downfield shots. Are we expecting a high dose of RPO? He's a serviceable scrambler, but not the level of Ian Book. Can he pick up 3rd and 7 with his legs?
Good questions from Insane Andy Tucson. The slow mesh, the downfield shots, high dose of RPO, absolutely.
Right.
Serviceable scrambler, I think probably better than that. Certainly not Ian Book. He was brilliant. But at least a serviceable scrambler. Can he pick up 3rd and 7? Absolutely. He rushed for 364 yards in 2021 and 11 touchdowns. I know a lot of those are short of the shorter version, but he did rush for 856 yards over 5 years, which includes sacks.
Yeah, which includes sacks and never should, by the way.
Yeah, so obviously, you know, he's capable of running the football. I think certainly not to the level of Ian Book, but I think if the question is, can he pick up 3rd and 7 with his legs? Absolutely.
Yeah, yes to all these. I think he's underrated here in the 3rd and 7 situation. Sam Hartman will be. He's a plenty nifty and smart scrambler. You have to use the word nifty, right? If he's not incredibly fast or elusive. So I think he's Ian Book didn't scramble like that. He wouldn't have started at Notre Dame. So that's not even a thing.
Yeah. I use the word resourceful.
There you go. That's good.
A resourceful.
Just don't use Jim Rat. Then you're fine. These are all yeses for me and the heavy dose. I cannot wait to watch the RPO offense. And downfield
The downfield throwing, we have a tendency to tie questions in. I'm going to go ahead and bring Jay Ricks 68 in with this one. And that is, the Athletic cited Sam Hartman's 26 interceptions the last two seasons when listing him in a fourth tier of quarterbacks across the country. Do you predict interceptions will be a major problem that follows him or hurts Notre Dame in 2023? Or was it more a result of playing in Wake Forest system?
I don't think it'll be a major problem. I think he'll throw more than Notre Dame fans are used to from their quarterbacks of the last 5 years, Ian Book and Drew Pine. Not including Tyler Buchner per pass. He will throw far fewer interceptions than Tyler Buchner per pass, and also will not lose as many points on those throws. But I think he's going to hit that 10 interception range because he takes downfield shots. And when it's third and seven from the 43 and you take a 47 yard pass downfield to Tobias Merriweather, if it's picked off, it's picked off. Those interceptions are fine. It's the end zone interceptions or the back to your own end zone interceptions that matter. The numbers of interceptions are just not as important as where they happen. Now, in the modern era, we can all say you should not throw 10 interceptions. That's probably true, too. I just think the way Notre Dame attacks, he will throw 10 interceptions.
And those are all great points, Tim, as usual. I think we need to, as we go through the season, I think we need to evaluate. Okay, he has six interceptions. Four hurt. Two of them were of the variety that you just said. I believe the number is he has averaged an interception every 38 throws. So that's you know, on
that's
average,
every game-ish.
Yeah, that's
nowadays.
10,
yeah.
But at least 10, right? Compared to, not that it matters now, but Tyler Buchner at every 13.7, I think it was, or 14, not a good number. You know, one thing that I think could limit the interceptions, and I do think it'll be high single digits, if not 10.
Yeah.
Is that Notre Dame will have a strong running game. And when you can lean on that, you don't have to throw as many risky passes. Now, he's a confident guy. And I think a lot of what the 26 interceptions in the last 2 years is about is him having confidence that I can make this throw, number one. Number two, playing with a Wake Forest defense that was awful and knowing that you had to score. Now, I did. I don't know if you were around. I did ask Sam Hartman that question.
Yeah, the first time you saw him, right?
Yeah, and he debunked it immediately. Now, I don't know if that was because he thought it was a stupid question or if he was just defending Wake Forest or what happened.
I think he was defending Wake Forest.
Probably.
Probably,
but he did make a lot of downfield throws. He will make a lot of downfield throws. I don't think as many as he did at Wake Forest, again, because Wake Forest probably found themselves in third and long a lot more than Notre Dame will this fall.
Yes, and also I would strongly encourage people to consider pace of play for Wake Forest. I think they were top 10 last year in terms of snaps, offensive snaps in a game. They moved a lot faster. Notre Dame won't be this slow, but I know Notre Dame was about number 90. 89, 90, 88. Yeah,
they're not
going to be like that.
They're going to be more like middle of the pack, I would say.
Right, but Wake Forest had to go. Wake Forest went fast. It was like watching Oklahoma. Remember how fast Oklahoma goes fast. Yeah. Oklahoma State goes fast. That's how Wake Forest went with Sam Hartman. There'll be fewer pass plays necessary. He'll be trailing fewer games. They'll have game control that Wake Forest didn't have. So maybe 10 is too much. Maybe 10 is the absolute high that he should throw, considering he's coming to Notre Dame's offense and what they have defensively.
Which leads me to, you know, I'm going to mention this in Thursday Thoughts. When you look at, Tim, I know you picked up the Athlon magazine. You see my feature on Joe Alt?
I did. Lindy's. Yeah, Lindy's is out now. That's the one with Joe Alt's the cover. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That was Lindy's, right?
Yeah.
I get them mixed up. Anyway, if you look at, you know, and this is the time of year where you start looking at, okay, who are the top offensive tackles? Who are the top defensive ends? And Notre Dame has one player on those defensive position lists.
Yeah.
It's Benjamin Morrison. Now, on offense, you've got Estime, you've got Hartman, you have Alt, you have Fisher. Maybe.
Actually, Carell has made the Lindy's list too.
I saw that. Yeah. I'm just concerned how good Notre Dame's defense is. But we know it will be much better than Wake Forest. And the second time through with Al Golden, I think will make a significant difference. Definitely, definitely in a red zone. There will not be a repeat of what happened.
Well, there can't be, or that's it. You can't do that. That's not a thing. It just means you have a bad plan. That's impossible.
Yeah. Just wanted to bring that up, though, because, you know, it's not at least at this point, it's not a star-studded defense. I expect improvement, but how much remains to be seen. And that will determine the 1.5 wins against Ohio State.
It won't determine the interceptions as much as the 1.5 wins. That's
and
for sure.
0.5 against the four ACC teams that you mentioned. We've had good questions here today. I appreciate it from our readers and others that didn't make the list. Of course, we have a question from Michael Mosher 7. What wide receiver needs to have a big year for the offense to be dangerous?
Tobias Merriweather. That's the one. That is the answer here, because Jaden Thomas will be solid.
Yeah, and Jaden Thomas won't average the yards per reception right. That Tobias Merriweather can. Some people may say Deon Colsey. I think Deon Colsey can ultimately be a productive college football player. It's a matter of how consistent. It's a matter of not disappearing for long stretches. But Tobias Merriweather's skill set and his ceiling, I think, is the highest. And I think that's an easy choice for you and me and most of us that follow Notre Dame football.
I think he absolutely has to be the breakout receiver, or you will be over on the 1.5 and you'll be over on the 0.5 together. You need a guy like Merriweather in this offense.
And having
he can make other players better, Merriweather, if he plays like what he can play.
Well, I think he and, of course, Sam Hartman can make Deon Colsey better, too.
Yeah. But I think Colsey just... Did you get the feeling I did, right, when we were leaving the Chancey Stuckey interview? Colsey needed to step it up from what he had seen that spring.
Yeah. And
not that he's far away. He was light years away last year when we left spring.
No, but that's been Colsey's MO. Yeah. You know, he had a streak where he was incredible on third down for about a month last season.
Yeah, that was incredible. I mean, what a run.
Really clutch for them. On third down, but you know, with the combination of Merriweather will get other people open. Merriweather can help get a tight end open, not named Michael Mayer. You know, right. I mean, all those things go hand in hand and play off one another. So, good question, easy answer though for us, I think, and most Notre Dame fans, that Tobias Merriweather has the highest upside of all Notre Dame players. We're going to wrap up with a question about basketball from Jay Marasco. Will there be any additional offers added to the basketball roster? If not, what are your initial impressions, beyond being young, of the 23-24 season? How do you compare it athletically to past Notre Dame teams? I think that second part is a good...
I do too, and they are. I think they're athletically superior to Notre Dame teams since the five freshmen came in the post Colsey Farrell era. So the last 5 years, I think they're more athletic. It's not the Blake Wesley year was a little different. Blake Wesley and Cormac Ryan together was it's pretty athletic backcourt. So you could, if you take out that year or you want to compare it to that year, that's fine. I think Notre Dame's wings are more athletic now than they've been.
You know, and you had JJ Starling too. I mean, it's not like,
I didn't feel like he was a totally special athlete the way he played, like Blake Wesley, though.
Not like Wesley. Wesley. I mean, when I saw Wesley, the closest thing for me, being an old timer, it wasn't Jaren Grant. And I know they're different kind of players. It was Orlando Woolridge. I mean, just flat out athleticism.
Yeah.
Orlando Woolridge was, for me, the closest, or Wesley was the closest to him. Jaren Grant, you know, of course, was spectacular as well, but not to the extent of Wesley, just flat out pure athleticism. And Woolridge, again, different kind of athlete, but he could jump out of the gym.
Right. I think when you're looking at the roster, obviously very young, you got to roll with the youth because, I mean, Matt Zona, I think, proved he belongs on the team and should have earned 5 minutes per half last year, the way he played at the end of the season. Once again, they were not taking out Scottie Pippen. They could have taken out whoever they had in that lineup for Matt Zona and given him a chance. The funny thing is, like, I would, if you're doing the over-under ACC wins compared to last year, you're taking the over, aren't you?
How many did they end up with?
Three? Let's come on.
I mean, we gotta
cut this segment if it's not four.
Just by chance, but yeah. When you look at the roster... it's, you know, it's athletic. There's right now there are 10 scholarship players, and they are the returning players, Zona, Sanders, and Konecny, the Notre Dame recruit, Burton, the three Penn State recruits, Shrewsbury, Iams, and Booth, the Penn State transfer coming with Shrewsbury, the elder, in Jai, and then the... Tay Davis, the Seton Hall transfer, and Roper, the Northwestern transfer. That's only 10. There's still three scholarships. You have got to get
You do have to
get somebody with some scoring background on the collegiate level.
I agree. I mean, this would be the year to bring in Marcus Hammond, when it was weird last year that they brought in Marcus Hammond because he was a scorer, a gunner, and not a great defensive player, and they already had a bunch of guards that could not develop their own shots. You need to keep searching. They will still be searching. You got to be able to. You can sell so much playing time too. You can still sell playing time. That's why it's plausible for me at this late stage. You can still sell plenty of playing time.
Yeah, no doubt. But man, this is going to be tough. This is going to be a transition. I think I went from, oh my God, the roster is going to be awful. And then when Shrewsbury came in, it became clear to us that the three Penn State commitment signees were going to come to Notre Dame.
Yeah.
Then we knew about Jai. He's going to come to Notre Dame. It's like, and that all happened fairly quickly. But now I think we're back into, at least for me, how I felt about originally. Of course, these guys are going to score. People, the scoring averages are going to go up for some of these guys, but you'd like to
how you said they're going to win by chance. It's just, well, they randomly won a few extra games because the ball went the right way.
And that, as we look at the roster right now, I mean, who are they going to be more talented than? Basketball talent, not just athleticism, but basketball talent. You'd like to have a couple guys that average double digits at Davidson or wherever, somewhere last year, and they don't have that, right? They do not have a guy among those 10 that averages as many as 5 points a game in college.
Yeah, no, that's a thing.
Okay, well, I talked about Journalism 101. I believe I'm going to have an interview with Micah Shrewsbury on Wednesday, June 7th. We'll see if I can see if I'm 0-for-2 in calling these interviews that are set up. But
you think they can get Grant Nelson out of North Dakota State when his Final Four is Alabama, Baylor, Florida State, and Iowa? I'm going to say it's going to be hard to bridge that gap. Boy, yeah. He would help immediately.
Yeah, and Alabama has a whole bunch of people to replace, and they're a lot hotter team to consider right now than Notre Dame.
Well, Baylor too. Seasons. I mean, Baylor and
Baylor. Good Lord. Yeah. So we'll see. I mean, he's not done. I hope, keep our fingers crossed. I get an opportunity. Irish Illustrated's first opportunity to have a one-on-one with the new basketball coach, and we'll see what happens with that. And hopefully we'll have a lot more answers. Maybe not necessarily who will end up filling out the rest of the roster, but looking forward to an opportunity sitting down with Michael Shrewsbury, who by all accounts is a guy that Notre Dame fans will want to cheer for, especially if he can exceed last year's three conference wins, right, Tim?
Just by happenstance, when they go out there, they happen to win.
Yeah. Well, we appreciate you joining us for a Tuesday edition. We will be going back to a Monday edition of Irish Illustrated Insider next week, Monday, June 12th. Thanks for joining us, everybody. We appreciate the questions. Keep them coming. Until then, this has been Irish Illustrated Insider.
Here's another Irish tale presented by Do Dublin Tours. Visit dodublin.ie to book your tour today.
There was a period of time in the 19th century in Ireland known as the Golden Era. At its peak, Irish whiskey accounted for 60% of the whiskey sold all over the world. Irish whiskey sales sadly declined for a number of reasons. The introduction of mass production in other countries, using more advanced technologies that the Irish were reluctant to use, along with the War of Independence and Prohibition in the US. The Irish were reluctant to speed up the process, opting for quality over quantity. As a result, the last distillery in Dublin closed in 1976. If you'd like to know more, Do Dublin with Do Dublin Tours.